Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm here in studio with my co-host for the day, Angela Lang, and with producer Cardi on the board, bringing us some great tunes. In and out of those breaks here. We do appreciate that.
Yeah.
For sure, man.
So we just had a great conversation with Jeff Mandel from Law Forward, talking about the implications of overturning Act 10, yeah. Whether it's going to stick, why this is different this time. And you had some thoughts about this, about how it kind of connected to some of the larger issues that you were discussing in your piece today as well, about where we go from here.
I mean, because like the whole thing from Act 10, and I've been on numerous shows where we talked about this, including with Matt after like Labor Day and stuff too, right? Yeah. Like, what does it look like of labor history in Wisconsin?
Right.
And I worked for a labor union for 3 years, which will feel like an eternity. And being able to kind of see how people didn't always view themselves as political, but they were proud to be a part of the union. Or not every union household, you know, voted for Democratic candidates, right? Mm-hmm. But there was something about the sacredness about being in a union that I think people felt that I think is gone. And so when we're thinking about where do we go from here, also thinking about the new-ish, and I would say new-ish since like maybe Bernie Sanders, like this class consciousness. And I think to his credit, him, AOC, I think kind of kicked it off in the 2016 election. I think it's only grown even more when we're talking about Amazon workers or Starbucks workers on strike. I saw that there was a picket, I believe, last week outside of the Starbucks on like in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So like all of these things are happening. And if we're talking about where do we go from here, I think there is kind of like the broad where do we go from here. And then there's like a very tangible where does Wisconsin go from here in this moment. And it's one of the things understanding people's understanding and in some ways newfound class consciousness. This feels like something that Wisconsin needs to do to kind of set that history right, knowing our broad history with unions.
Yeah, but I think it has to be something. It can't just be returning to something of the past.
Oh, yeah.
So it has to be, in a way, charting some sort of new course forward.
The past also wasn't working.
Because the past also wasn't working. That's exactly right. And I think that's what, we can't just be defenders of what the establishment currently is or what it was.
Yes.
You can't just be like, oh, we're going to go back to a pre-Act 10 era of Wisconsin. Yeah. You have to figure out what the next chapter is going to be. And I think connecting those dots there, you know, about class consciousness, about, you know, the unions and all of that. But I think we also have to recognize how much has happened in those almost 14 years.
It's not the same playing field.
It's not the same playing field. We have, I think Wisconsin experienced the most dramatic drop in union membership of any state in the country over the past 14 years. And you know, part of that is strategic to limit the power of unions. But also, you know, we've seen Donald Trump and this version of the Republican Party make overtures to those unions as well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think back to when I was covering the RNC in Milwaukee. And the first night of the RNC, the final speaker of the night was the head of the Teamsters.
Right.
And so I think, you know, and it gets back to the point that you were making in your piece of saying, like, we shouldn't shame the individuals for making a decision in the election. It should be about, you know, where the institutions and the organizations and the leadership in the Democratic Party, in, you know, the groups that are connected to the larger Democratic Party extended universe, right? And how those can be part of, you know, the class consciousness that you're talking about going forward.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's also an opportunity to reconcile, right? Because they're, you know, the fact that there was union folks at the RNC, we're talking about how union folks are going to be directly impacted right now.
Yeah.
What does that look like? Are they no longer our union brothers and sisters? Are we no longer in kind of, you know, the struggle with them? And also, I think a lot of folks maybe that are part of a union but decided to support Trump, how do they reconcile? And this is something I want to keep thinking about, and I alluded to it in the piece, is like, how do working class folks that voted for Trump sit and reconcile with Trump surrounding himself with people like Elon Musk and billionaires? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that I didn't.
And stacking his cabinet with just like billionaire after billionaire.
Yeah. Like, that's the one thing I never quite could like fully wrap my head around. I mean, there's a lot of things in the mega universe I can't wrap my head around. But like, If it's
a discombobulating universe.
It very much so. I'm like, what is happening? But if you say, you know, Trump is going to lower tariffs or grocery prices are going to go down or all of these different things, and you're talking about how the wealthy can't relate and maybe that's why you didn't support Kamala for whatever reason, you're saying all of these things. How do you, what type of mental gymnastics do you have to do to be like, yeah, I still have full confidence that Trump is going to lower groceries when he's surrounding himself with billionaires and doing all of these tax credits and all these things through billionaires? At some point, those voters will need to reconcile with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that looks like.
And I think that's, I've thought about that speech from, and I think Sean O'Brien, was that the president of the team?
Yeah.
That speech at the RNC. And he's talking about things like challenging corporate power and introducing paid leave and greater benefits for union members. And I'm sitting there, you know, as the lefty columnist, recombobulationary guy, just thinking like, some of that stuff sounds pretty good. I don't know. I would love to. Yeah. I would love to have had like a live reaction feed of like Scott Walker and Robin Voss.
While
Sean O'Brien was saying what he did, and I had a couple good conversations with people over the course of the week about that speech because I thought it was so interesting.
Yeah.
But it again goes to the kind of the difference between Trump on the campaign trail and Trump governing.
Yeah.
Because I think Trump on the campaign trail wants to have his like we talked about before, getting those low propensity voters and bringing people who are not necessarily part of the political process into the political process.
Yeah.
And about, having a bigger tent, having, you know, LGBT speakers at the RNC or like Amber Rose and Sean O'Brien. And
so
like some very weird. It can be very weird, but America's a weird country.
Yeah, it works.
So you need
clearly
some weird folks on your side if you're going to run for things.
True.
But it goes back to, we saw him govern for 4 years as president as well.
And
so we know what was the largest accomplishment that he had from a legislative standpoint, giving a giant tax break that overwhelmingly benefited the wealthiest in the country. And you look at like the type of, you know, oh, we're going to bring back manufacturing to the Midwest and things like that. He did Foxconn.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like, we have so many examples of just the rhetoric does not match the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we go forward, you know, you could talk to people about like, oh, I liked the rhetoric of, you know, I think there were more similarities of Trump's 2016 campaign and his 2024 campaign than the 2020 campaign.
Agreed.
When he was having to run on his terrible record. Where he is instead, you know, running on this type of like new Republican Party that he's introducing. But where we go from here of it all is holding him accountable for saying those types of things and what the reality, whether the reality matches the rhetoric this time around, because it certainly did not last time around.
I feel, and I've said this before, it might've been one of like the post whatever analysis that we did, but I feel like that whole campaign was ran off of like vibes, right? Like he could just say whatever he wanted. And people will be like, but how? Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to, like, people could say,
we're going to lower prices. How? We'll just do it.
Right. Yeah. And people were like, okay, like how desperate and how rough were some people's plight and pain in lives that people were like, all right, he didn't say how I was going to do it, but at least he said it. So I'm just going to go over here. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I'm going to have at least a little bit of hope because he's at least talking about it. I want us all, and we talked as we walked in the building that we don't really do New Year's resolutions, but I want us all to just like, not saying we need to go the way of full-blown conspiracy theories. We don't need to do all that. But I just need us to use a little bit more critical thinking skills. Just because Trump says, I want to do this and it sounds good, we have to ask the questions.
Yeah.
Right? Like the devil's in the details all the time. And I think that's how we ended up in a place because he said things that sounded good. And even though he couldn't back them up, Kamala wasn't saying them at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about Trump is it's like he says so much.
Yeah,
he's
also
just like he's doing these 2-hour speeches like three times a day, you know, doing these marathon podcasts with the Joe Rogans of the world and all of that. And he just says so many things that you have no idea what his policies are actually going to be.
Right. Also that.
And so like I think that's where we go from here too, is just like, we have to not get swept up in just like what he says.
Yes.
It has to be more about what he does.
Yes.
And because he says I'm very trying not to swear on the air right now.
This is a lot.
Cardi be ready with that mute button if we need it here. But he says so much BS, and he says so many different things that you don't know what he's actually going to do. Like, I was thinking about the Joe Rogan interview that he did.
Did you watch all of it?
I didn't watch all of it.
Okay, I was going to be like,
there was a couple
wow.
clips. No, I didn't, you know. I probably should watch all of it, but just for, like, archival brain, archival purposes. But he had, there was one thing that he was, like, floating out there, and just, like, you know, he wants to raise tariffs.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he said in there is there was a story that came out that same day as that podcast where he was just like, wanted to get rid of all income taxes and do it all on tariffs. And just like a dramatic change in the American tax code and economy and like so many different
things.
Again,
vibes.
And Joe Rogan was like asking him, he's like, do you really want to do that? And Trump's like, yeah, sure. Why not? And this is the problem. He's just such a moving target. Oh, my gosh.
That was perfect.
Nicely done, Cardi. It's just, he's such a moving target on all of it.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, tariffs or abortion or deportations or so many of these different things.
Yeah.
He's just said so much.
It's hard to prioritize. And it's also hard to keep straight.
And that's the strategy. It's just to have this, like, wall of sound where you just don't hear any actual message come through. You just hear all of the nonsense.
It's all just ridiculous. And that's the thing is that, like, we have to have a higher threshold. It's like, yes, I see how people are like, well, at least he's acknowledging my issue, whereas this other side isn't even acknowledging it. Like, we have to have a higher standard for that. It's just like, cool, anybody can say that, like, I want to give everybody a puppy because they're cute. Ask how that's going to get done, right? And then we also can talk about the higher standards that we give other people, because when Kamala had her own policies, positions, plans, well, how are you going to get that done in a divided Congress? Well, who's going to pay for that? You aren't asking those same questions around a guy who wrote a plan in a crayon and is going off of it.
Joe Rogan was not asking those follow-up questions.
Shocker that the man named Joe Rogan is not asking critical questions. And
I did not think the host of Fear Factor and The Apprentice would be this big of a part of our lives 20-plus years later, but here we are.
My mom used to love Fear Factor, and, like, when it was on, and, like, Joe Rogan, like, I loved it as a kid, and just, like, younger me had no idea that this is where Joe Rogan would end up.
Did any of us know where this was going?
I also didn't know Trump was going to go this way. I remember still in, like, 2016, we're like, we can stop with this Trump joke now. Okay, he's not going to win. We can stop now, right? And then here we are.
And here we are.
Eight years later.
He's the most. Yeah, I was thinking about this too. If we're, you know, at the one quarter mark for the century, right? with 2025.
Yeah.
And I think, with Donald Trump being the dominant political figure for the last three elections, the last decade now.
Since
it was 2015.
Enough.
He came down the golden escalator, right?
It's true.
I think if you're looking back at this quarter century, I think Donald Trump is the most influential going to go down as the most influential politician from this quarter century. As much as that hurts my Democrat millennial heart that it is not Barack Obama.
I don't
Obama,
hate that.
But I think it is. Donald Trump is going to be the most influential politician from this era.
I agree.
Cardi's really got the sound effects going, and I do appreciate
tell me how
it.
You really feel, Cardi.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree, and I also think a lot of people were very upset that Time put Trump on the cover of, like, Man of the Year or Person of the Year or whatever it was. And it was funny because I saw the clip of when the editor announced it on the Today Show. And, you know, he's kind of teeing it up. And, like, he does not look enthused himself personally. Like, his reaction as he's announcing this on the Today Show was, like, not enthusiastic. But it's true, though. Like, I don't like it. But at the same time, there's a reason that man is on the cover.
Yeah.
I hate it.
You win an election, you're probably going to be person of the year.
Yeah. There's a lot of influence. Like, obviously, we don't like his level of influence, and it's very dangerous, but that doesn't minimize the effect of it.
Exactly. That award was not best guy.
Yeah, no. It was most lovable politician. Yeah, that's not it.
And that's what I'm saying, too, is, like, when I'm saying the most influential politician of the first quarter of the century, it's not best politician.
Exactly.
It's most influential. And I think, you know, that's the new world that we're going into and the where we go from here. And all of that as Trump 2.0 term begins. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host, Dan Schaefer. Here with Angela Lang, who is co-hosting, producer Cardi. We've only got a few more minutes of the show. We've almost made it all the way through.
Yeah.
How about that? So stick with us for one more segment here on The Maggie Dawn Show.